Hello everyone, it's Space Cafe podcast time, and my name is Marcus. I can already promise you that you will need to revisit this show, or at least take a bunch of notes, because our guest today has some very unusual angles to what you guys love best, the space industry, of course. When I first did my research on our guest, I came across the following paragraph. He is the new generation of young professional artists creating new imaginaries that will infect the ideas of tomorrow that will make the future of space possible. And he is part of a movement in countries outside the major spacefaring nations that is taking ownership of the space futures. So I was like, wow, oh my God, is this guy for real? And hell yeah, for real he is, I promise you.
Okay, give me one sec. Yes, I can hear you. Can you hear me? Okay, let me just do one thing.
So what you just heard is our guest clearing his hard drive to make sure he has enough disk space for the podcast recording on his computer. What a considerate gesture.
Okay, let's start.
So he is the first artist to receive the Young Space Leader Award for his contributions to astronautics and space exploration. And I spare you the list of all the engagements because this would totally break our time limit here. By the way, while you're listening to this, one of his artworks is circling the Earth at 27,000 kilometers per hour. In general, our guest is a jack of many trades. And he can also be very critical when it comes to our space endeavors. He thinks we do not go far enough and we need to get our shit together because we could do a lot better. Yes, even you, Elon. Ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, I bring you Nahum Romero, who is currently ashore in Berlin, by his own will, that is.
Yeah, well, I used to have a very nomadic lifestyle for maybe the last 10 years, but at some point you have to settle down somewhere. And out of all the cities that I like and that I appreciated, Berlin was a chosen one. I have to also to say that it's because I have a Mexican passport. Mm. So in Germany, artists are still welcome. So there's a pathway for artist migration to the country. So I was very grateful that.
Which is unfortunately not a very common thing to be welcomed as an artist, right?
Well, to be honest, as anything, migration is becoming harder and harder in many countries. Mm. When it comes to migration, the most important thing in most of countries is how much money you have.
Yes, absolutely. So to cut right to the chase, what keeps a space artist busy these days? Is it okay if I call you a space artist?
I like just artist, but I understand that.
For the sake of that show, okay?
It's okay. Most of my work is space related.
Okay, so what keeps you busy these days?
Oh, plenty of things. I divide my day into halves. So the first half of the day, I'm an artist and I'm writing a lot. I'm writing a book. I write poetry. I'm painting, making music. Making music is such a huge thing in my life. And then the second half of the day, I do things with my institute, Cosmica, with K. The Cosmic Institute. Mm. Here we do a lot of cultural and critical programs around space activities. Right now, education is a big topic for us. So we cover all the spectrum of audiences, from people in vulnerable situations, such as migrants and refugees, to space experts. So right now we are designing the humanities department for the summer program of the Space University.
Wow, interesting. So how do you do that? At noon, you decide you take off the one hat and put on the other one? You know what that reminds me of? Immanuel Kant, the philosopher. People would set their clocks to his walks around Königsberg. You know that story.
I know. And I know Kant's work, but also I know his routines because I'm a robot when it comes to having routines. Like, people know if I'm standing in my studio, if I'm standing for tea in the morning, it's because it's 11 in the morning. If it's in the afternoon, it's because it's 5. I'm a clock. And for me, having these very structured days, I see them, you know, because it apparently goes contrary to the idea of an artist, you know, like having a spontaneous life and all. But I see it more as playing jazz. Mm-hmm. In order to be free in your creation, then you have to be highly disciplined.
Yes, absolutely.
In the way that you approach music. So I see it like that, you know, like I approach my life in a very disciplined way. And then I'm free to do whatever I want within that. Also, the big challenge is that I don't do one thing. I do 20 different things at the same time. So if I want to keep my heart happy and do all the things that I love, I need these very strict routines. So I love it.
Guys, let's make a break here and take a quick listen to the music Nahum talked about. By the way, after listening to what this guy does, I chose to skip our regular score at the end of the podcast and showcase another track by Nahum in its entirety. The mood was just too perfect. The track you're going to hear in a second is called A Fallible Girl and is performed by his band Orchestra Elastique. And yes, of course you can find it on the online platform, you know, the one with the green logo. People who are juggling projects at the same time, is there anything you might want to share? Do you use pen and paper, or do you use any tools like apps or software to keep you structured?
Yeah, well, I use paper. Every Sunday evening, I sit down and I plan my week. Normally, in terms of meetings and all that, normally things are planned like 1-2 weeks in advance, but in terms of the things that I want to achieve, that's Sunday night, and I plan what I want to learn, what do I want to experiment, what projects I want to push. To be honest, use the simplest thing, and I like writing in paper because it's slow, and when you know, it's like reading at the same time. When you're doing these like slow actions, it's like actually engraving intentions or ideas or new memories into your brain. So the exercise of writing slow, I think it goes just like very direct to your brain.
I'm a little proud of myself right now because I'm using an old school pen and paper notebook as my analog last resort, so to say, in my digital mayhem. By the way, Nahum's structured lifestyle seems to pay off. One of his key pieces of art made it to the ISS. Yes, you heard right. The International Space Station. But let the artist speak for himself. I mean, like, this is super crazy. So who on earth, no pun intended, can make his or their piece of art be transported to the International Space Station? So this must be a crazy dream become a reality. So tell us a little bit about that.
Yes, well, I've had many, I have some wild dreams. The first one was to be in zero gravity, which we will talk later. The second one was to launch something into outer space, and the other one is to jump from the stratosphere. But
so don't tell me this already happened. So
it's on its way.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Yeah, all these projects require, you know, years of preparation. And in the case of the International Space Station, I think it was a very, it was a series of elements that were aligned in the right place, in the right time. And it just happened. It was very challenging, of course, in the sense of making something with the restrictions that we had.
Tell us first about the project. What was it all about?
Okay, so the project is a flashing light. It's inside a box. You have many restrictions when it comes to payloads that go to the International Space Station.
So it shouldn't be too heavy, I guess.
It should be too heavy. It should, you know, the materials have to be tested. We wanted to use internet, like real-time interaction with the artwork, which brought another series of security issues, because at the time that I have an artwork in a museum that connects directly to a component in the ISS, basically I need to have the keys to the ISS network.
Wow.
And that brings a lot of security issues. So all the development was very complicated. The project in itself, it's a very simple gesture. Right now, on board the International Space Station, there is a box that is the artwork, and inside there is a light.
I mean, like, is it right now?
Yeah, right now. Yeah, it's been there 2 years already.
So in a drawer up there on the ISS, there is your box with a flashing light.
Exactly.
Right now.
And it's going to come back maybe next year. But right now, there is this light that right now is switched off. But as soon as you touch this sensor that I have in my studio, you touch it and my heartbeat, that is one of the manifestations of having a heartbeat is that you have a pulse. You know, your blood is pulsing. So as soon as I put my fingertip on this device, it sends to the artwork my pulse, and the light starts pulsating as my heartbeat.
Wow. So am I understanding you right? So your pulse is being transported to the International Space Station, and the astronauts on the space station, they can, if they wanted to, take a look at the flashing light and thereby see if you're, I don't know, excited or asleep or whatever.
Well, the light is inside a box, but inside it has a camera.
Okay.
So anyone that has access to the streaming of that camera can see the heartbeat.
Wow.
So that's what we do in exhibitions.
So could I also get my heartbeat beamed up to the space station? How would I do that?
Sure. We have done it in exhibitions where people, you know, like had this surface and they touch it with their hands, and then in a big screen we see the heartbeat and the flashing. Right now, as we know, it's not very friendly to touch surfaces in public places because of that little thing that is going on everywhere. So we are pausing the activities of the exhibitions, but hopefully early next year we will be able to
reactivate everything.
Yeah.
Nice. So, I mean, like, how does one go about bringing such a project into reality in the first place? How, I mean, like, do you call NASA and say, hey, this is Nahum, I have this art project. So was it something like this?
Well, I wish that it was like that, because that will make things easier for anyone that has an idea for a project in space. But the reality is that I think it's the result of me being engaged in space activities for the last 10 years and working very closely with different space agencies. So what happened is I've done in the past projects with Roscosmos, with private space companies.
Roscosmos, that's the Russian NASA.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. Like the pioneers.
Yes, right. The ones who could get people on board the ISS when the Americans couldn't.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Those that launched the first human, the first object, the first woman, first animal into space. So I have worked with a few space organizations. I've been working closely with the International Astronautical Federation, which is the Space Federation, if you will. And I've been lecturing in the Space University, in the International Space University. So the opportunity came through this university, ISU. They had been in conversations with a company based in Belgium called Space Applications in order to test a new technology. This new technology was about sending payloads to the ISS that could have real-time interaction. But it was very experimental in the beginning, and we thought, well, we can do an art project with this and test the possibilities. If art sometimes is good at, is at pushing the envelope and pushing the possibilities of what is possible. So I started this conversation with the Space University and eventually with this company, and then with the European Space Agency, which at the same time were negotiating with NASA about the launch, and then NASA negotiated with SpaceX if it could be launched in the Dragon capsule. So it was just like a huge series of organizations that again were aligned in a very lucky way. So we could so we could do it, and then we had little time for development once things were confirmed.
That's the usual the usual way things work. You have almost no time to make things possible because the prior negotiation process is taking so long.
You're negotiating 1 year and a half, 2 years, and then when you have the green light, it's like, great, next month. Yeah. It's like, whoa, my God. It's like,
yeah, you got one shot. So tell me, how did you get noticed that you got green light? Was that a phone call? Was it an email? How did you react?
Well, it was a launch date. Mm. It was like, okay, we have a launch date.
Okay.
And the artwork has to be ready by this date. And then you have to take a flight and go to Cape Canaveral to Florida. Wow. So I was like, okay.
I can do that.
And I can do that. And the launch was just beautiful. It was my first launch.
Actually. Wow! Tell me, I'm getting goosebumps right now. I cannot imagine how that must have felt.
It's incredible. It's something that everyone has seen on TV, that you see, you know, in magazines and on Instagram, everywhere. But being there, you know, and listening to the countdown, and then you see this ball of fire and no sound, it's silent. And then you see this fire going up very slowly. That was the first thing that I noticed. I was like, wow, that's slow. It's in slow motion. And then after a few seconds, you hear the explosion, the sound, because of the sonic boom. And it doesn't look like flying. It looks like levitation. Mm. I don't know how to explain it. It's not a motion that we're used to see. Mm-hmm. or to experience, not even in airplanes, mm-hmm. is something else. It's basically this tiny thing, the rocket, challenging the gravity of the entire planet and actually winning.
You see a battle between...
You see a battle.
Technology and Earth.
Absolutely. Humans versus Earth. And at some point, humans win. Mm. And this thing goes up. And then because the Earth is spherical, if there's anyone that doubts about this, you can see it in a rocket launch. because you see that it goes up. And then it goes down, and it doesn't go down. It just
seems
it's following
the curvature.
And then it just goes away in the horizon.
Wow!
And in the meantime, it creates rainbows in the skies.
Lucky
and,
you.
Yeah, beautiful.
Lucky you. So, if anyone wants to experience that project, wants to learn a little more about that project, where do people need to go?
You can find the easiest way is just social media. I'm everywhere, active all the time. At Nahum, my name, N-A-H-U-M, artist. Nahum, artist. And then if you go to my social media, you find the links for everything.
Beautiful. So that was NASA, that was the International Space Station. But you do have a bunch of other endeavors with different institutions. What's your favorite project other than the one with on the International Space Station you would like to share?
I would like to talk about Cosmica and the work that we are doing in the Institute, because I think it's very important. So in my work as an artist, I explore poetical gestures and ideas and stories, but at the same time, as a human that lives in this time of our history, I have a huge commitment with contributing to the biggest challenges that we have as humanity. And because my field of expertise is space, I've been wanting to contribute, and that's pretty much the idea of Cosmica, where we work in the critical and cultural issues surrounding space activities and how all these activities that we do in space have an impact in humanity. You know, like right now, everywhere we're discussing diversity, you know, colonization, and what it has brought to people with different color skin pigmentation. We're discussing about women and feminism. So when you go to the space sector, you see one thing. You see that, yes, we're developing the latest science and technology, but some of the ideas that we are still using in space activities are 500 years old.
Interesting.
For example, we still talk about colonizing Mars, having a colony on the moon. And it's like, okay, stop. Colonization is a very specific concept, right? Mm-hmm. It's not something to be explored. We've done it. In many parts of the planet, bringing a lot of trauma. Why do we want to use that framework to advance humanity?
Colonization entails force. We should get beyond that, right?
Yeah, colonialism, it's a mechanism of imperialism, of extending the power and claiming ownership of a foreign land, whatever that is. So of course, in Mars, we don't see humans, but it goes with many other implications. It doesn't have to be only humans. Right now, as we see in the new space and all the commercial space plans, many of them are based in extraction, which is, again, this is what...
Exploitation.
Exploitation of resources, claiming ownership over celestial bodies. And I'm not saying that these things shouldn't happen, but I think we are exporting things that haven't worked in the planet. When you see a lot of the space activities and important events, they tend to be patriarchal, nationalistic, and extremely white. We saw it a few weeks ago with a SpaceX launch. And again, my role as an artist is to be critical with this, with these symbols, because symbols have a big effect, and we're seeing it here on our planet, in a world that is ruled by white men and money.
But at the same time, we're seeing that throughout history, a huge driver of innovation was triggered by exactly those notions, by notions of colonization, by initiating conflict. As so, I think this goes even back to Heraclitus and war being the father of things, of all things, of innovation. But again, all this has for a very long time served as a huge driver of innovation. So how would you react to that?
Yeah, that's true. War activities or how they call it, defense activities, are extremely linked to the space sector. Let's remember that in the space race, this is one of the many reasons, no, why it was important to have a space race, because of the development of rocketry. A rocket can be used for something as beautiful as launching humans or a telescope into outer space and learn more about the universe, or it can be used for an intercontinental ballistic missile. It's the same principle. So yes, that has triggered a lot of inventions. It's, yeah, of course, it's true. Dominance and economic revenue and profit for a little percentage of humanity. Of course. But I think right now we are in times where we have to radically reimagine our systems. And why art is important in all this? Before space exploration was even possible, there were artists that were already imagining life beyond our planetary home. So right now, I think we have a big problem of imagination, and this is where artists can contribute. There's this philosopher Jameson who said that today it's easier to imagine the end of the world as we know it than thinking of substituting capitalism.
Very interesting.
And it's wow.
Yeah,
of course.
Yes, absolutely.
It's true. I mean, capitalism as an economic model is a man-made thing, but the way that we conceive it today is as a natural force, which is not. It can be changed, but there's so much cultural inertia in our own ideas, in our own world, that we are not seeing the possibilities of being a little bit radical. Sometimes I love to say this. Sometimes when I'm in public events discussing these ideas, and also I'm very critical about the concept of nations and countries and borders. Sometimes people tell me, "Oh yes, but thinking of a no borders planet is utopia." I'm like, "Yeah, it's fantasy," but at the same time, having a planet with those borders, that's also fantasy. It's not a natural reality. And while no borders seem like a utopia, sometimes I think that having borders are very dystopic. So sometimes I even use this language, and I say all these things to provoke. And that's what we do very well in the humanities and the arts, to provoke reflection and to try to see new possibilities.
I think we have forgotten that things have already been different, and things do not necessarily need to be the way they are right now. So it's by the way, it's super interesting. If you go to different places like Northern Europe to Sweden, for example, people usually do not have fences around their houses, which is super interesting. I mean, like, this is a totally different view of the world and view of society. The place I live in Austria, people have fences around their house, and this produces a very different mindset. So what does that mean? Having fences is an invention, and having no fences is also an invention. So the decision resides within us how to deal with it. And the same holds true for many, many things. So for example, 100 years ago, a farmer hasn't even thought about innovating their whatever technology to grow crops. And so if you asked a farmer 100 years ago, what would you do next year? He wouldn't have understood that question, because it's a question that doesn't make sense. Because he would have told you, well, I would live my life the way I live it right now. But these days, in our culture, we would say we would need to improve. We would need to create more profit. And that's the crazy invention we're right in at the moment.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that goes, I mean, the last thing that you said, that comes with growth. You know, like, having an economic system that relies on perpetual growth in a finite, in a planet that has limits, boundaries, it just doesn't make sense. And that's just the fact. But you said also something very important. As much as I think that it's important to imagine new possibilities, sometimes we also have to listen to other ways of seeing and engaging with the world, such as indigenous communities. You know, like, we've been very good at silencing groups all around the world, and the Western culture has been extremely good at just like muting
right.
So many other ways of understanding the world. So I think the other strategy is that to be a little bit more humble and listen to those groups that lived in a more reciprocal way with the planet and the universe. I come from a land that where there was a culture, Aztecs, and their cities were completely laid out in relationship to the universe.
Mm-hmm.
And this was not decorations to say like, okay, this avenue is going to match, you know, like this star and this constellation. No, these cities and their correspondence with the night skies and the stars showed a very profound understanding of our personal relationship with the natural world and the universe as a whole.
So, going back to your example and to your art installation on the ISS, and now with all what we have been talking about right now, that artists have the opportunity to show the decision makers, the politicians, a different view, a different angle on things, do you have the impression that someone has already listened, that you can in fact change thought processes?
Yeah, absolutely. I like to think that with my work, a lot of my work, especially through Cosmica, is about putting together a community. And this community that exists already of artists like me, I think we're doing something. One example is when was that? Maybe like 2009, I was invited to create the first committee for cultural aspects of space in the Space Federation. And this was the first time that the Space Federation said, oh, culture and art is important.
Mm.
And we have a permanent spot where we are in direct conversation with all the space agencies and all the big decision makers. I think that's a very concrete result. The fact that in the best space university that exists, we have programs about indigenous knowledge and the universe, about space feminism, about contemporary art. I think it shows that, well, some spaces are being open. And I love this community. So I'm going to say something positive, finally, about the space world. And that is, there are incredibly smart people out there. You know, the space professionals, they are constantly solving the craziest challenges. So whenever we go there and we start discussing about the language that they use, about how in their photographs of the latest space mission, there are only men and et cetera, they are surprised that they haven't seen that before.
Interesting.
They go like, oh, that's true. And that's because it's not that they, yes, they have to know it, but it's because we need to get closer to the humanities in everything that we do. Mm-hmm. And as soon as you have people that can bring these questions and these issues to the table, then you can only have a better outcome in whatever you're doing.
Very interesting. You know, I'm not telling you anything new here, but maybe to some of our listeners, because if you take a look at inventions and technological evolution throughout history, especially when it comes to the past 200 to 300 years, evolution in technology was usually preceded by imagination. And this kind of imagination usually originates in the artistic realm, in the artistic world. The very first big break that happened was in 1817 when Mary Shelley wrote Frankenstein. Before that, imagination usually resided with the gods and with magic worlds and whatnot. And all of a sudden, Mary Shelley, by the way, a woman, wrote a science fiction piece that pushed gods and the magic world out wherever and pulled the human side in into the center of things and made a huge political statement about that, and thereby initiated a huge debate when it comes to science fiction and its role in technological evolution. And of course, we know Frankenstein precedes the advent of artificial intelligence. This is what's happening right now, and we're talking 1817. Then, of course, we have H.G. Wells. We have William Gibson with his Neuromancer novels talking about artificial intelligence. Then we have Jules Verne, 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea. He talks about fuel cells. Now take a look at Elon Musk. He's doing sort of similar things. So that's an interesting observation to make here, that throughout history, technological evolution very often is preceded by artistic imagination. So this gives a huge thumbs up in your direction, right?
I want to think that's the case because of the freedom that exists in the arts. You know, sometimes it has happened to me once or twice that I'm in important space meetings where we're discussing things at the United Nations or somewhere else. And I received notes from my colleagues that work in space agencies saying, hey, can you address this issue about the military satellites or about this law? And I realized that they wanted me to say these things because they can't, because they are attached to national interests. But as an artist, again, I'm free. You're not free. In their payroll. So having sometimes this freedom actually helps. And it's a freedom of citizens, actually, not only of artists, but the power of imaginaries, of thinking in the impossible. And one day those things might be possible. So right now we are in a very interesting time where we don't have too much time left to change the direction of our impact on the planet. And I think it's extremely relevant to question the way that we do things and to imagine some possibilities. Mm.
Say, Nahum, if you take a look at the space world at the moment, I think this is fair to say that we're experiencing a new era of space exploration. So how do you feel about this? What do you think, where do you think will this lead to? Are we already with this phase of exploration now ready to leave the planet as humans and set up shop somewhere else? Or is this still a precursor and we are still not yet ready and need a little more time? So where do you think we are at the moment?
The different pieces in the space community are rearranging. I am curious to see what happens, because as loud as the private space companies can be today, because they are having some very important achievements, let's acknowledge that, like reusable rockets and commercial spaceflight. I think still the discourses and the imaginations are very poor and very limited today. For example, when I'm in front of space audiences, I always say, okay, who's the most visionary people that we have in our community? Tell me the name. Marcus, you can tell me. Who's the main...
Yeah, of course it's Elon.
Elon. Okay. What's his vision of... What's his ultimate vision?
Yeah, I mean, like, his ultimate vision is to bring, I mean, like, a million people to Mars and what else? To set up a permanent transfer system between Earth and space and orbit and... Yes, is it?
Okay, yeah. Those ideas have been around for hundreds of years. So as a professional in imagination, I cannot accept that as a...
So it's not good enough.
As a vision. It's not. It's not. That I'm not saying that his technological achievements are very good and very inspiring. But as someone that plans to lead humanity into the future, I think it's very limited. There's one thing that we have to distinguish today, and that is, one thing is exploring the universe with humans, and I completely agree that. I think it's something beautiful, wild, incredible. But to confuse that to the expansion of humanity outside of our planet, I think that will require a deeper discussion. Why do we really want to do that? Because saying that Earth is not always going to be here, I mean, the plan B speech, I really don't buy it. I think we need to have better arguments for that, because right now, the way that we are dealing with our own planet, which is a fantastic place, even if you happen to live in Siberia, where it's like inhumanely cold most of the year, then even that place is a paradise compared to
Mars,
to life on Moon or Mars. So we are in an incredible place. We are in space already. So if we don't learn how to look after the most incredible planet that we have access today and in the next 1,000 years, what's the point of going to another place?
Because we would bring our issues to wherever we go. So we cannot run from ourselves. That's the problem.
No, exactly. It will be highly irresponsible. And it will show that we haven't learned from the last centuries of history in our own planet. So, and this is my personal view, human space exploration, yes. Let's keep doing it. And I really hope that in my lifetime, we'll see the first humans visiting Mars. Expansion of humanity in other planets permanently, I think we need a bigger discussion on that. I don't have the answer, but I would like to see a more open conversation in society about it, and not only a millionaire deciding that for all of us.
As a visionary artist, you're entitled to speak your mind about future visions. So if you had the ultimate say for humanity in all of this, what would you say?
That's a good one. You know, a few weeks ago, I was looking at the word humankind. You know, it's a very specific term that we use a lot in the space community, you know, like for, they used to say mankind, but now we're updating the words that we're using and we say humankind. And I think it's that really, you know, to appeal more to our human kindness. Mm-hmm. Getting closer to humankind. I think I really hope that our future is kind to each other, that we are kinder to the non-human entities, to animals, to celestial bodies, to the atmosphere, to the ocean. That'll be the best thing that we can do, and that we could aim to.
So it's in fact kindness to anything.
Yeah.
So it's that's not related to the planet or to ourselves. It's kindness to anything we get in contact with.
Exactly. To be kind with this cosmos. Mm. We are. This is the thing. We are in space right now. We love to have these divisions, and I like to be critical about the concept of outer space and inner space. It's like drawing a boundary. Of course, there's a natural boundary, but we are in space right now, and we are part of this solar system, of this galaxy, of this universe, of this cosmos, and that's wonderful. You know, so we need to be kind and to be grateful of having this strange opportunity of exist and to be able to have this mechanism in our brains, our minds and hearts, so we can discover and understand a very tiny percentage of a crazy thing.
The pale blue dot.
Yeah.
Right.
Which is, I think we are in the best place that we can imagine, and we don't know it.
Yeah. Nahum, any more questions from my side would totally break that moment. Thank you. Thank you so much for that beautiful vision you just shared with us. At the end of our show, we usually have a fun tradition, and we call it Space Espresso, because, of course, this is a space cafe, and in space cafes, you sometimes order an espresso. And an espresso is a quick shot of a science story that comes up into your mind without much thinking. So what's the most interesting, most inspiring science story that you would like to share with us? Whatever comes into your mind without much thinking.
I've been a couple of times to CERN in Geneva as a guest artist, and you know, I remember the first time I was like so excited to go to this place of monumental science where the coldest and hottest temperature of the entire universe exists, and I was like, wow. So I prepared myself, I took my cameras, and I wanted to do field recordings. And I arrived to CERN, and of course you cannot see anything of what they're doing because they work in the quantum level. So they cannot even see the particles. They just can detect with data and that's it. But I remember that my biggest finding was poetry in that place. I remember that I was speaking to one of the leading scientists at CERN, and he was explaining me his experiment, and he said something like this, you know, oh, in order to do this experiment, first we had to measure how long is forever. And when we did it, then we were able to, and I was like, stop. You just said that you measured forever. And I think that's poetry. You know, I don't want to know what you did at the end with that. Just tell me that you measured forever. And that's one of the most beautiful things in my science stories, that I've been fortunate enough to be in launch pads, to be inside of space capsules, in the places of monumental science, and always the surprise doesn't come from the artifacts, it comes from the humans.
Thank you so much, Nahum.
Thank you, Mark.
Very inspiring. What a moment. If you would like to learn more about Nahum, please do go to spacewatch.global and check out our show notes to dig up more about the incredible artistic oeuvre of Nahum. And if you guys out there would like to share your story, your science story, or your questions with us, please do shoot us an email at podcast@spacewatch.global. And other than that, I'm super looking forward to talking with you guys in 2 weeks again. And Nahum, thank you so much for taking the time. Best wishes.
Thank you so much, Marcus. Thank you for listening.
That was incredible.
Ciao, ciao. Bye.